Hey, there we go. Hey, folks, thanks for tuning into the Banner Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Lafferty. And with us today, we've got a bunch of guests. First off, Jeff Stormer, who is running an RPG Kickstarter right now called Mission Accomplished. How you doing, Jeff?
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thanks for being here. We also have frequent co-host, Jacob Blackman. How you doing, Jacob?
Doing well today. Glad to have
you. Good to be here. And Walter Billiard's here as well.
Prove it. Sorry.
All right. So, Jeff, just to kind of introduce you to our listeners, our legions of listeners, you've been playing RPGs for 20 years. You host your own podcast, Party of One, an actual play podcast focused on two-player role-playing games. And you host All My Fantasy Children, which is a collaborative character. I'm just reading off your Kickstarter. Sorry.
That's fine. World That's... Blink podcast. It's less work that I have to do, so please feel free to read.
And I love this part. You've written When You're Here, Your Family, which is a LARP designed to be played in Olive Garden, which uses soup, salad, and breadsticks as resolution mechanics.
Yes, it is the unofficial LARP of the Olive Garden, only because they will not respond to my tweets demanding that they make me the official LARP designer of the Olive Garden.
Oh, my God.
So specific.
It's real specific. It's real specific themed. I mean, technically, I guess you could play it at any restaurant that offered unlimited soup, salad, and breadsticks. But that seems to be pretty specifically just the one.
Maybe Sinzetti's, or there's a few other Italian chains I can think of. But yeah, that's cool. I just ate. Walk me through a typical session of When You're Here, Your Family.
Sure. The way that it works is fundamentally that. As you are going through the unlimited soup, salad, and breadsticks experience, you kind of piece by piece fill in the narrative experience. So the idea is that you are a group of people, a community that have left the place that you live and you are going to a new home in a new place. You start out when you're waiting for your table at the Olive Garden. You all go around and you say one reason why you left behind the world that you left behind. Then when the meal is started, you are basically like settling in the new place, and you're sort of the first generation of people who have settled in this place. You each kind of name a thing that is important to your community. Then the first round of food comes out. You are now the second generation, and now you reflect back on the ways in which the last generation has sort of disappointed you, or the ways in which they sort of unprepared you for the life that you're leading. And as subsequent rounds of soup, salad, and breadsticks come out, you play the future generations, and all of whom are having these sort of difficult, complicated relationships with the generation that came before it. And as breadsticks are coming out, because they're coming out on a different time scale, these are sort of problems of the community. And you go through these things as you eat your breadsticks, your soup and salad, until you kind of end your meal, at which point the community has progressed to a point where you have to decide, all right, now we have to leave this place and go on to our next destination, basically finishing out that sort of narrative cycle of, so as our parents arrived here, we will now leave to go to our next destination.
Oh, wow. That's a thing of beauty.
It's a lot more. There's a lot more depth to it than you would expect from the Olive Garden LARP. But I think that's what makes it magical.
No, that's actually beautiful. And I'm thinking of a Viking take on it right now. But that is really, well,
I live that every time I go to an Olive Garden and somebody refers to as the red stuff they put on all the food as sauce.
Mm-hmm.
Every time my soul dies a little, knowing that this has become more and more American, I'm just going to leave.
That's fair. I feel like we all have a moment at the Olive Garden, which is the moment that we say, all right, I'm pretty much done here and I'm going to leave. Generally, hopefully it's before the food actually arrives, because by then you're too deep into the problem.
Yeah, my family's from Sicily, so when we go to someplace like the Olive Garden, I have a hard time. my wife is always kicking me under the table. Don't put the accent in. Don't say anything with your accent. I'm like,
that's fair.
Thanks, appreciate that.
You know, as an Italian, I'm surprised you go to Olive Garden, because that's
I go when it's Olive Garden. Yeah, I go when somebody else wants to go. Mm-hmm. You know, if I have like sausage, peppers, and pasta, and you know, sausage soup or something like that, and you know, they, hi, my name is Wendy. I'm going to give you some sausage soup today, and you know, if I drop a spoon in it and the spoon doesn't stand straight up, it's not sausage soup. It's not anything like that. So I just go there for my friends and, you know, eat some faux Italian food and just play my own LARP where I feel like I'm back in the third grade and they're massacring lasagna again.
That's fair. Yeah. You gotta go. Well, you gotta go for the authentic dishes, like the pie that they've made of ziti that is some sort of nightmare dish. There's a lot. I've learned more about the Olive Garden than I'd ever really like to.
And how much research did you put into this? Like, how many Olive Garden playing hours did you get, or did you sometimes play test like around the kitchen table with like frozen breadsticks?
Literally none, which I think is the correct amount of Olive Garden research that should go into the project. And perhaps that might be why they've been stonewalling me, why they've been like icing me out on Twitter, is because I've acknowledged that I've not performed the necessary research.
Yeah.
I would like to state for the record that I have never been to Olive Garden.
That's probably the right call.
Yes.
You know, I have more pride in my Italian food. Sorry, Mike, go ahead.
You live in Oklahoma. What the fuck?
I like Italian food.
Okay. All right. I growing up in Indiana amongst the cornfields and basketball hoops, I have this hazy memory of Olive Garden being the place you went before prom. And it seemed really good, but at the time I also thought that Kmart was good. So it might just be coming from the Midwest. And, you know, I go to Olive Garden now and I'm like, it's like watching the Super Friends as a grown man. You're like, how did I like this?
And it just doesn't quite have that same magic.
It's like you go to Chuck E. Cheese and you're not a kid anymore. You're like, these robots are terrible. Why was I ever impressed with this? Speaking of odd situations, that's an awful segue. I'm sorry. But we're here to talk about the kind of, let's call it a nascent genre of ordinary people in comical / super science espionage situations. I've mentioned a show on this podcast many times, Archer, which is sort of a combo of workplace comedy / super spy comedy, where you got your support staff giving sexual harassment lectures, and you got your field agents, you know, wearing tactical turtlenecks and, you know, riding zip lines to kill people. And one show I haven't seen that you mentioned in your Kickstarter page is Better Off Ted. Was that since you list it as an inspiration? I'm guessing you like that one.
I love Better Off Ted. It only ran for two seasons. I want to say it was like 2010, 2011, maybe.
It was amazing.
It was a show that deserved much better.
This is where the moments I love.
I don't know how that happened. Sorry, I was looking up the reviews of Archer to look for pithy commentary, and Metacritic has an autoplay ad, so sorry about that.
Now we know. I did not know that.
Yeah.
We learn a little bit every day. That's really the joy of learning. Better Off Ted was a show that departed far too soon. The premise was it was a large commercial research facility. Like they were a vaguely defined tech company, and it involved like the R&D department of that tech company. And every week would be like a problem would pop up. And basically you would watch how it would go out to like the research team and sort of the problem solving team and the marketing team. And the whole joke of it was that the company was this soulless, like, vicious, vaguely super villainous organization, but everybody was wearing, like, peppy suits, and it was just, it kind of hit that very same sort of, like, office satire. Hey, are we in a dystopia? Like, that was the vibe they were going for, and it was one of my favorite shows of all time.
You know, I spent half an hour in a meeting at my corporate Paymasters company yesterday, where we had to think of a core value for our team couldn't exceed 90 characters.
Oh, extra fun.
That was over an hour of my life. That was, so it's not that far from the truth sometimes. And in the mix, we've got Venture Brothers, which if you've seen is kind of a spiritual parody, if you will, of Johnny Quest, and a couple of the main characters are you've got some normal characters who are henchmen for an evil supervillain, kind of, you know, dealing with that, you know, ordinary guy in a ridiculous situation kind of comedy, and you've got various other characters who are, you know, minions, jumpsuited or not, for various other evil and heroic organizations. So.
Ultimately, Venture Brothers is a love letter to all those 60s and 70s Hanna-Barbera cartoons that we loved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They work in a lot of homages. Nathan Fillion has been playing a really disturbing Spider-Man homage yes. last couple of seasons. So, who squirts webbing out of a really appropriate place for a spider.
Yes. It's technically more anatomically correct than out of the wrist.
Exactly, exactly. You know, a cool thing Archer's done, just to touch so we don't have the listener saying, hey, you guys haven't been watching Archer. The last couple of seasons, they've kind of done a weird thing where they say, we're taking these characters and the bones of their relationships and putting them into, you know, different situations. The main character is sort of in a coma. They kind of have that as a framing element. And like this last one, Danger Island, they were on an island in the Pacific in the 1930s, fighting Nazis and dealing with cannibals and searching for hidden idols. And before that, they were Hollywood post-war, and they're setting up for next season, which is sort of a sci-fi thing. So been kind of a cool take on that. But talking about your game, Mission Accomplished, I've been wanting someone to make an actual Archer RPG for a long time. And there's a few Archer games out there, but they're mainly variations on drinking games, which makes sense given the subject matter. But thrilled to see someone doing an RPG. Can you tell me about it?
Yeah. It is Mission Accomplished is a role-playing game of super spies and office meetings. The premise is you are a team of secret agents. You have just returned from saving the world, killing the bad guys, blowing up the doomsday device. You've come back. Now you're in a meeting room with management, and you have to kind of hash out who gets credit for what went right and who gets the blame for what went wrong. By the end of the meeting, somebody is going to get burned or shipped off to Siberia, and somebody is going to get that sweet, sweet corner office with the floor-to-ceiling windows and the company credit card that's only for emergencies, but, like, we all know what they mean when they say only for emergencies.
Hookers and blow, absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. So what kind of – how do you – I'm guessing this is a narrative game, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very party game, story game kind of atmosphere. And the way that it works is you start out by – you have a mission dossier, which is a list of, like – basically is a if kind of picture it in D&D terms as like an adventure module. It has all of the like faces, places, props, office protocols that go into a given assignment. So the bad guys have captured a moon laser. They're going to shoot that moon laser at Washington, D.C. unless you can blow up the moon laser. Your objective is to blow up that moon laser before they have a chance to wreak havoc on the world.
Okay.
Everybody then looks at this dossier. It's about 500 words. And says, okay, so we successfully blew up the moon laser, but somebody didn't fill out their passports correctly. Like, it has a list of office protocol that are like, well, you're technically in outer space, which is technically leaving the country, so make sure your passport is up to date. And somebody, you go around the table, everybody names one thing that went horribly wrong. Then you introduce your agents, and the agents are a name, your specialty on the field, how you helped contribute to the mission, and a fun fact. Because we're really more like a family than an office here, so we want to get to know you as a person. And then you anonymously rat out two of your coworkers and say two of the things that they did to bungle the operation. And then you play through a short sort of debriefing session where management grills you on all the ways that you messed up and arbitrarily assigns you success and failure points based on those scores.
Man, this sounds like an Army AAR.
For us civilians, Walt, what's an AAR?
Oh, sorry, after action report.
There's a lot of that in the game. I originally wrote it specifically as like a debriefing session kind of thing. And then somebody pointed out to me that it was a game about an office meeting. And I said, oh no. Oh God. I wrote a game about my day job. Oh, somebody killed me. And then I leaned into it as hard as I could. And now it is a vicious office satire because, I don't like office meetings.
No, preach brother. I feel you.
Yeah, my favorites are the meetings about having a meeting.
Oh my God, we had so many meetings at my last job about so many things about like we just need to be cutting meetings. Why are we having so many meetings? And then they would say it in a meeting every time. That's the only time you ever heard about how there were too many meetings was in a meeting. Drove me up a wall every time.
Yeah, I was working at a large defense contractor about 10 years ago, and. I've been there for a couple of years, and I asked my boss, hey, this one lady we always see in our meetings, what does she do? What's her job title? And my boss, who'd been there 10 years, said, I have no idea. I just see her at meetings.
Fair. That's a valid observation.
So, yeah, no, I'm absolutely right there with you. It's it gets ridiculous. My company is kind of famous for having really bizarre cult-like atmosphere. So I'm living this every day. So we talk about more of a party game. Are we rolling dice? Are breadsticks involved? How are we resolving
this? There are no breadsticks involved, which is outside of my comfort zone a little bit in terms of game design spaces. But the way it works is as you're going through the game, you're kind of being prompted by mission control about like, hey, why did you forget to update your passport? You give a little bit of spin about, well, I forgot to update my passport because so it because, you know, Joe Schmo next to me forgot to give me the paperwork that needed it. Didn't really seem like good team spirit on their part. And then mission control based on the 7 habits of highly effective Black Ops agents, which are the value qualities that determine how we are going to save the world. Vital skills like team spirit, inventory management, and fiscal responsibility will either give you a commendation dice, which is a 6-sided dice that is good, or a citation dice that is bad. At the end of the game, we roll the 2 pools of dice. They kind of cancel each other out, and depending on who had the highest result, that person gets a promotion, and then we kind of, the person with the lowest result gets shot in the back of the head, and the results kind of echo out from there.
So it sounds a little like Fiasco.
There's a little bit, there's a lot of Fiasco in it. There's a lot of, I took a lot from Fiasco in terms of like there's playbooks and you're rolling the dice and they're kind of canceling each other out. That was a big point of inspiration, but I wanted something that was a little bit more like one set piece focused, like had a little bit less player agency. Because Fiasco, like, the player gets to say, oh, I want a white dice here. I want something to go my way. I wanted a game that kind of added that paranoia element of oh, no, mission control is out to get you, so you're going to get the result that you get, whether or not you did something to deserve it.
I feel that. So you said playbooks. What kind of different playbooks do you have?
The playbooks are sort of the mission dossiers. So far, I've got 3 of them in the book right now. I'll probably end up having about 5 of them in the final finished book. Right now we have a moon laser. You can go to outer space and blow up a moon laser. You can infiltrate a high stakes poker tournament. Taking a cue from the essential spy film, 1998's The Avengers, you can infiltrate a biodome and try to capture control of a weather control satellite. Because if I'm going to make a game about spy movies, I'm going to include the worst spy movie of all time.
Somewhere Sean Connery weeps.
He can weep over his piles of money.
Well, that's true. That's true. It was really bad, wasn't it? That was a shame. It was a
bad movie. And yeah.
By the standards of 90s action movies, it was bad.
There's an episode of DuckTales in the new DuckTales series in season 1 where they pretty much give an homage to all the 60s and 70s British TV spy thrillers, and it was wonderful, especially because the MacGuffin they're all after is the secret to gummy berry juice.
Very good.
Oh dear Lord.
It's a great episode.
Nice. So what are some of the zany things that have happened in your playtests? I mean, has anybody entered into an office romance right in front of you? I mean, did somebody Xerox or create a clone of a hologram girlfriend?
We've had some clone drama. We've had some people release some clones, and then somebody killed a clone, but we're not entirely sure if they killed the clone or the actual agent. Some of my other favorites are one of our agents was a wet works specialist, but one of our other agents didn't understand what the word wet works meant, so the entire time just kept accusing them of doing plumbing badly.
I was going to make that same joke, but I was like, I should shut up. He's going to get there. So
thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. But there's been a lot of the fun of it is both the very elaborate stuff, like with the moon laser example being like, oh, Mount Everest doesn't exist anymore. We kind of let that happen. It's not really a mountain anymore. But then at the same thing being like, yeah. And somebody threw up on their spacesuit, and we have to put that in the wash. That's just an extra company expense that we're going to have to deal with. And I really like that. I love that the game kind of brings out sort of like very big set pieces of like a moon laser destroys Mount Everest. But then also like somebody didn't file their paperwork correctly. Somebody didn't do all of their online training modules in the weeks before we started our operation.
You know, you keep bringing up this office stuff. I know it's cliche and supposed to be funny, but you're describing my daily life. It's kind of painful.
It's Here's the thing. Mission Accomplished is secretly a horror game. It's marketed as a comedy game, but it is secretly a horror game about working at an office job.
I feel you. Did you see that one episode of The Office where they did Michael's movie?
Mm-hmm, I did, yes.
Condition Michael Midnight. Scar. Yeah. It just kind of reminded me of that for a second. Speaking of cheesy spy movies. So you guys are doing really well. Looks like you're about 200% funded with 20 days left to go. So yes. What kind of stretch goals are you thinking about, Jeff?
Let's see. We have a few guest-written mission dossiers, one from James Wallace, who wrote The Adventures of Baron Munchausen, as well as the lead designer on the most recent edition of Paranoia. That one's making it into the book. We hit that goal. Next up, we have one by Erica Chappell, who is the designer of Flying Circus, which was a big Kickstarter hit earlier in the year about biplane combat. She's amazing. She's one of my closest friends, and I'm really excited. Tentatively, I think she's leaning towards World War II. Magical Girls will be the theme of that one, but we're not sure yet. I'm giving her free rein and just saying, do what you want. You've got 500 words. Make something happen. And then we have one from...
500 words.
500 words, you make it happen. Whatever your mission is, you make it happen.
All right.
And then we have one more guest-written dossier. I'm thinking if we pass 10,000, because 10,000 is sort of what we expect to get right now, then I have a few more like guest dossiers that I might get lined up. I'm thinking about throwing in a few alternate settings. So like if you wanted to play this game as a fantasy thieves guild, I have that written and I just have to kind of put it in the book. So that would be an easy thing for me to say. I will add this to my Word document if you fetch me $1,000 and I shall add this thing that I have already written to my book that I'm already giving you.
That's the magic of crowdfunding.
Yep. I can just say these things and be like, fetch me currency.
Awesome. Well, I mean, you guys are you're tickling 8,000 right now and you got 21 days left. I mean, you got the slump in the middle, but you'll probably finish stronger than that last week. So yeah, 10K looks really doable.
It feels pretty doable at this point.
So how is the comedy different for a medieval thieves guild, a fantasy thieves guild in this kind of game setup?
A lot of it is the same. You know, I specifically wanted to do Fantasy Thieves Guild because I wanted it. I think that the comedy of the game comes from bureaucracy. And I knew that was kind of the best sort of place to put in a bureaucracy in a fantasy environment. But it's a lot more, it's a little bit of a weirder game at that point because you're actively like criminals and therefore you're a little more willing to like sell each other out and betray each other. In the spy, in like the core, in like the base setting of the game, you're spies and you're theoretically the good guys. So you don't necessarily have the same incentive to be like, oh yeah, they're trash, they're bad, like they're an awful person, and I don't want to associate with them. Whereas if you're criminals, you have a little more of that option to be like, to just sort of immediately go for someone's throat. So it kind of changes that tone of the game a little bit.
I'm almost wondering if you could do like a Sopranos modern day mafia kind of.
Oh, that would be a good fit. Yeah. That one, somebody just mentioned to me like a Lovecraftian cult would be a good one. Like we accidentally didn't summon the Elder God. Let's figure out who's responsible.
You know, if you did the Sopranos one and did that, you could totally set that in the back of an Olive Garden.
Oh, you absolutely.